Well, welcome to Sundays with Papa Jeff. My name is Jeff Bellier, and you're listening to BBSRadio.com. This show is coming to you from the shores of St. Pete, Florida, on the Gulf of Mexico. And right now we're having a little tropical storm blowing in that came up from Cuba. And so during the show you may hear some sounds of the howling wind. And maybe it'll add a little drama to my show. If you happen to have tuned into my earlier shows on BBS, the Mind Goal Hour, you know, or you're about to know, that I work with individuals and groups and corporate clients and have done for about 30 years on goal achievement strategies. And I particularly emphasize the need for inner work as a critical first step in our efforts to define and work toward and achieve what are our true goals in life, you know, those goals that are truly fulfilling and satisfying. And I believe there's only one that's truly fulfilling and satisfying, and we'll come to that. On this show, Sundays with Papa Jeff, I will continue to talk about goal achievement strategies, but particularly because it's Sunday, a traditional, quote, holy day. My focus will be on the ultimate goal of inner work, and I will call it, in my model, I'll call it spiritual attunement. So I'll talk a lot about that. I'll spend a lot of time on attunement strategies and techniques, if you will. Now, I don't put a lot of stress on techniques. I will talk a lot about the spiritual attunement, and I will primarily be talking a lot about the results of what I'm calling spiritual attunement, the success that that brings in our life. And on that topic of success, I often will ask people doing seminars or training sessions or group teaching to write down how they would define success in their lives. And I'll give them some time to do that. And if your pencil and paper handy, you might do that. And after some time, after they had a little time to list some things that mean success for them, I will ask them if success is the same for everyone. And usually the response I get is that, no, of course not, that it's very subjective and that we all have different things on our list. That new home, a new job, a new car, a new relationship, or a variety of things that are part of our goals, what we want to attain and achieve in this life, that would spell success for us will be different. But I tell them that I can tell everyone what is on their list. Now, this is not a psychic show, and I'm not going down that road. Well, if you start to think about it, success is the same for everyone. If you look at what is on your list of success, even though it may be different than mine, you'll find that really what you have listed are those things that you believe will bring you peace of mind and happiness and contentment. And it is attunement to this place in life that's at the core of all our goals. And so, in a sense, success and our goals are all the same. Now, what our ultimate potential may be, we'll talk about that a little bit later. So what I do in talking about spiritual attunement and the results of spiritual attunement is I offer a model, a paradigm, words, to talk about, you know, or more accurately, point to something that can't be put into words. Now, that might sound like a pretty tough task, but pointing to it and speaking from the experience of it is so rewarding and so compelling that it becomes a choiceless obligation to attempt to share it. And, of course, even though it can only be understood by personal direct experience, it's the only way it can be comprehended, this something that cannot be put into words. And of course, you know, the fact that it cannot be put into words hasn't stopped the world from offering a massive body of spiritual text and expositions on the spiritual text and teachings and certainly all the different spiritual traditions and sects and denominations that are set up in an attempt. Some do a great job, some have lost sight of what the true core message is, in an attempt to point to this spiritual attunement, if you will. And let me say right now, and I'm sure I'm going to repeat that often, I absolutely do not accept the notion of any sort of exclusivity or only way. Now, I happen to grow up in a Christian community. I recently had an article published in a magazine entitled How I Found Jesus in a Hindu Temple. Well, what I found was the teachings of Jesus matched with the other truly awakened teachers. And I don't believe that any truly awakened teacher ever intended for some sort of exclusive club to be formed in their name. Now, following the teachings, of some of the beautiful teachers. I mentioned Jesus, Yogananda, certainly Buddha, Krishna, on and on and on, and I don't want to try to name everybody because I'll miss a lot of them. Those are some that I have to be familiar with. Prem Rawat, once known as Guru Maharaj, now still certainly honored as with the title Maharaj, still continues to teach. And he's the, for those of you who may know this or come from my generation, he was the young perfect master who came to the West at about age 14, took an awful lot of flack, a lot of bad press, but now at 48 years old, he still continues more quietly and with less fanfare in the media, at least, still offers a beautiful, beautiful teaching all around the world about our ability, and I'll call it spiritual attunement, he called it knowledge. I spent time with him back in the 70s. And so just want to repeat that I don't believe that any truly awakened teacher ever intended for some sort of exclusive club to be formed in their name. I believe that squeezes the life out of their teachings, and it's the great cause of debate and war around the world that separates us as a human race. That if the core teaching of any tradition, any spiritual tradition, or even beyond theistic language, to use it just as the language of the heart or the language of love, if the core truth of that is experienced, it cuts through any doctrinal or dogmatic or creed differences, and it shows them to be so secondary. And that's so clear in so many of the teachings. Well, I guess it's clear once you come to an understanding of it. And so I may use theistic language, and I will speak of the mystic path, and I still teach a class called the Mystic Heart Meditation. I train teachers in that. But what I speak about does not even require theistic language. It's about a personal experience. It's a language of the heart. Now, I like to call it the mystic heart. And I think people who experience this opening of the mystic heart, who experience this awakening, you know, struggle with context and words to express it. And there's, you know, obviously there are ongoing debates from so many different factions, from those who certainly deny the teachings, and many spiritual teachers, if you've read any history at all, have run into tremendous difficulty. And even in their personal lives, but those on the grander scale know it historically, ran into terrific difficulty saying that at its core that being a loving person is the very best strategy for enjoying life, that it begins there, and being a loving person, which may be seen as a gift, and I'll get into that in a little bit, is the ultimate best strategy for achieving that peace of mind and happiness and contentment. And I don't want to begin railing, and I'm just going to brush past this quickly, but nationalism and corporate greed and fundamentalism and those things that would cause us to have separation are so counter to what truly awakened teachers teach and what the spiritual context of the message is all about, or the living context of the message, if you will. So as I said, it's known and comprehended by direct personal experience, you know, beyond words. And before I go on any further after these first few minutes, I don't want to say bore you, but I do want to give you a little bit of his story, so that you have hopefully a better understanding of where I'm coming from and can make an informed decision about how much longer you want to listen to me or connect with me. And speaking of that, there's a call-in number at the station. Anything you'd like to discuss if it comes up. I ask that you do that with loving awareness. Our call-in number is 877-876-5227. And operators are standing by. I think Don is the operator at the station. But if you have a comment, Don will talk to you a bit, and if something you'd like to add to the show or affirm or discuss or ask for clarification, please feel free to call us at 877-876-5227. And again, this is Jeff Bellier, and this program is called Sundays with Papa Jeff. And I guess what I'll do is explain where Papa Jeff came from as a nickname. I've just recently completed my 65th free trip around the sun, and I think I like to think I'm finally at the point where I'm comfortable with Papa Jeff, even though my wife tells me I look much younger and more handsome than someone 65. I am there, and she's nodding even. That's wonderful. And have enough weight in my beard to get comfortable with Papa Jeff. I was I hesitate to say it. I was a pastor of an interfaith fellowship for 7 years, and I had a beautiful occasion to conduct a baptism of one of the new babies of people in our fellowship, and he was known as D. And as part of the baptism, I asked everyone there to participate, and my wife Susan had made a beautiful holy water, if you will, from lavender and rose, and she spoke a little bit about what those meant as part of the ceremony of baptism. And so I offered the baptism, and then I asked everyone there who wanted to participate, and I asked them for one thing. I said, if you want to participate, I'm going to bring the water by, and I'm going to bring Dee with me, and I just ask you to dip your finger in the water, and just touch Dee someplace, and just agree that when Dee is a little older, and he comes to you and says, can you tell me about God or about life, or we have something trouble, I ask only for one agreement from the participants, that they begin to tell him about a God of love, and that love is the most important thing in life, and that all of the truly awakened teachers will speak to that and start with that story. So everyone agreed, and I went to the baptism. I took him to each person, and if you can imagine holding a baby, he was about 5 months old, I believe, at this time, and I was cradling him in my arms and my other hand in my arm, and I was holding the baptism bowl of water in my other hand. So I would come very close to people who would dip their finger in the little bowl of water, and their face would be literally inches from my nose as they looked at the baby. And if you've ever seen, and you experience yourself, of course, how we look at a baby, how we smile and we accept their purity and their innocence, and our face just softens. Well, I had a great privilege of witnessing this about 40 times, and some of the gruff, two-day growth of beard cigar smokers had to move their cigar away, and I would watch their face just soften to the most non-judgmental, loving, accepting expression as they reached down and just touched Dee with this baptismal water. It was just a beautiful, beautiful experience. When I came to Dee's father, I handed Dee to his father, and his father handed him back to me and said, Dee, this is, and he kind of searched for some words, he said, Dee, this is Papa Jeff. Well, you know, some kids there heard that, and they like saying the name. It's just kind of a fun name to say, Papa Jeff. So they began right after the baptism, you know, Papa Jeff, would you get me a drink of water? Papa Jeff, can you tie my shoe? Papa Jeff, can you? And, of course, when kids do it, it doesn't take long before it trickles up and adults start doing it. So some people know me as Papa Jeff, and particularly on the Internet, I belong to some Internet discussion groups and come and go in and out of on occasion. Meditation Society of America is one of my favorites. Bob Rose is president of that. I've invited to be a guest on the show and look forward to that opportunity. And some other teachers, some spiritual teachers, a good friend of mine, Swamiji, I won't even try to pronounce her whole name, who is from Washington area and used to divide her time between Washington and Rishikesh in India, and is now in Mexico, who's a beautiful teacher, and I've invited her to be on my show. So I'm looking forward to these Sundays with Papa Jeff. It will have a spiritual context to it, or at least I will use theistic language, but I ask you, non-theist, to just look for the core truth of what I offer. Okay, so I've covered the Papa Jeff, and now I'm going to come to my story and how I came to be offering Sundays with Papa Jeff on bbsradio.com. Before going into that, I want to say I have found such beautiful, like-minded and like-spirited people at BBS Radio, with the different hosts and what I listen to the show. It's just so beautiful to be part of this community. So if you're tuned in, if you're hearing this, you are tuned in, I would be so bold as to say count your blessings and thank God for, or whomever, or higher intelligence, whatever's comfortable for you, for really good karma, because you've come upon a beautiful place with some beautiful teachings. I'm not speaking of my show necessarily, but I'm speaking of all of the shows that are on bbsradio.com, and just be looking for some great things to come from this radio station, and I'm sure we're going to hear more and more of it. So my story. I caught the last train to Hippieville. I was in my late 20s and had lived a very conservative New England Catholic life. I grew up with grandparents You didn't say any bad words in my house. And my grandmother informed me that if you took a puff off a marijuana cigarette, you'd want heroin the next day. And so that kept me on the straight and narrow for a long time. But not forever. I did catch the last train to Hippieville in the early 70s. And through a series of events that I'm going to brush by quickly, I found myself in a Hindu ashram carrying a bag of rocks, if you will, a bag of tremendous guilt. I left a very conservative family home to join what at the time was called counterculture and involve myself in a lot of experiences that suffice it to say, brought me to a place where I felt degradation and extreme guilt, to the point that I came to this ashram with a mantra that was, "Let me die." I won't take you through all the melodrama of that. This mantra had been with me for a few months, and I happened to meet some people who said, "Oh, there's a teacher who teaches about achieving inner peace, that you can come to peace of mind." I said, "Boy, I want to hear more of this." So I went to the ashram, and over a period of 4 months, after first hearing about it, at the end of about 4 months, I was selected for initiation into this order. It was a world peace mission, and it was a great show. It was a show that I needed at the time. This was full-blown into the hippie era, early 70s, maybe a little later in the hippie era for some. But we were on the East Coast. The West Coast started a lot sooner. And so I found myself in this ashram, this temple, with a mantra, "Let me die," and hearing the teachings that we could know an inner peace that would change our lives and bring us a new perspective. Well, those words resonated in my heart, and I wanted to hear this. And when my name was read as being selected to be initiated into this order, I offered up what I later come to know could be capsulized, and there are some finite portions to it, so I'm offering just the very, I don't believe it's superficial, but just Ken Wilber capsulizes this bodhisattva vow, as it's called in Buddhism, which essentially says, the way he capsulizes that, if you will grant me this peace of mind that I seek, I will spend the rest of my life sharing this with others, telling others about the possibility to come from a place of abject guilt and despair and degradation, or from simply a sense of something missing in life, or just a quiet desperation, as Thoreau called it, that if you will grant this to me, I will spend the rest of my life sharing it. And I also ask not to forget the shame and embarrassment and degradation that had brought me to that point in my life, so that others who were in such pain that I would have direct empathy for them and not forget that. And so I entered the initiation. And about halfway through the initiation, I had just finished some graduate work in sensation and perception. And so I was, you know, intellectually stunted. And I found myself rationalizing what was happening as part of it. Oh, this is just this, and this is just that. And about halfway through, my ego, if you will, my primary identity at the time, popped in and said, you know, this is a dead end. This is a blind alley. You've been duped. There's nothing here. There's nothing for you here. You might as well just get up and go. But, you know, there were 28 people in the ceremony, and it was offered in a very sacred context. And I simply didn't. I wanted to be civil. I wanted to not disrupt this, regardless of my feeling at the time that it was now worthless and empty. Well, what that caused in me at the time was an absolute giving up of any expectation whatsoever. So that I didn't go into the remainder of the initiation with any expectation. I just had given up and had just kind of emptied out and just totally surrendered to the process, if you will. I had nothing to offer, and was drifting back into my mantra: "Let me die, let me die, let me die, let me just no longer exist." Well, I don't know the triggering event, but I do believe that letting go, that emptying out, really was what allowed for me, we'll call it a variety of things, a sudden inrush of a new way of knowing. The first thing that struck me was in a quiet meditation was there is something that I am part of that we call God or higher intelligence that's real, which is a stunning blow to the ego to even consider. But what I found is that once an ego, please take that in the context which I'm offering, I'm saying our identity, our rational process, and I'll get back into that a little bit later in the show, was stunned by something that transcended thought. It wasn't something I thought about. It was like a new presentation, something startling coming to me in my inner world. And I found myself, essentially, if you will, in a lucid dream would be a way to explain it, or to speak of it. And I found myself on a mountain path, and I saw a light being, a glowing figure. Now, I grew up Catholic and had seen pictures of Jesus over and over and over in my life, and so my mind at the time said, you know, that let that represent Jesus. You know, that it would be called an Ishta Devata, a personal God in some of the Hindu traditions. So I saw as Jesus, but I didn't see a face, and I had a sense that it was, if you will, it was like all past masters, all past awakened teachers, all light beings. And I know I'm going a little cosmic here, but it's Sunday, and I can do that. This is Sundays with Papa Jeff. You listen to bbsradio.com. Call in number 877-876-5227. And I'm in the midst of a little story of my history. And so as I'm on this path, and I see this light being. Now, first, as I hit this path or this level of this astral plane, groping for words, the sense of being part of something greater than I am as an individual, but still retaining my individuality, came to me powerfully. Then I saw this light being. And this light being didn't speak to me, but had me turn my head and look further down the path. And the instant that I looked further down the path, I experienced what I have only heard people who have had traumatic near-death experiences speak of, those and awakened teachers, that I saw the classic blue-white big egg of light that as the time collapsed, I saw it and I was in it at the same time. And in that light, I was, these words are not precise because they fail me and I'm attempting to give you a picture of it somewhat as I point towards it. As I said, I'm speaking of something that can't be put into words, that I felt cradled by a God of love. I felt cradled by love itself. I felt a cleansing and a pouring through me of a divine love. I have no other words that I can use right there. That it, of a divine love that put zero mileage on my conscience, that made me brand new. I felt as though I was being held by this love, and this love just kept washing over me and washing over me. It was overwhelming. I felt that I was just going to disappear. And I did. And then I just disappeared. It was like I was no more. But there was still this love. There was no me. There was still this love. And I was that. And in the next instant, I was shown, please I keep apologizing for these words, but just follow it as a story. I was shown like beacons of light everywhere, like I was looking at the universe. And there was a sense given to me at that moment of absolute perfection, of that everything works together for perfection, that there is a perfect energy that we are part of. And in the next moment, I opened my eyes. And when I opened my eyes, I felt like a couple of minutes had passed, and I guess it had been quite a bit more than that. But as soon as I looked at my hands, I was startled to find myself back in a physical body. And then I was just overwhelmed with how beautiful my hands were, and that I could touch my thumb to my fingers, and that my fingers bent, and that I was flesh and blood and bone and skin, that I was in this body, and my consciousness was in this body, yet I had this totally new perspective about life. And I was, for those of you who may be able to relate to this, I was high as a kite, but I in our 4 months of being in this training for this initiation, we were vegetarians, no sex, drugs, or rock and roll. We had some beautiful spiritual music we listened to, but it was we had vowed to listen to satsang, which is a discourse of truth, and be of service. I worked in a huge in a furniture, I won't say store because it was a furniture warehouse where we had donated furniture that we took to poor families, and so it was satsang, service, and meditation, just quiet time and reading about the teachings. And so I was just so incredibly joyful. Tears were streaming down my face, and as I said, my hands were incredible. I looked at the pillow I was sitting on, and these are the hippie days. We're all sitting on pillows around the room. And the pillow, the fabric, and the colors, and the designs, and the flowers, and the leaves, and the beautiful way that they were illustrated was overwhelming. I was so stunned by it. It was so beautiful. And then the carpet, I saw the carpet and the whole fabric and the weave of the carpet. And then I looked up at the teacher who had held this initiation, and she was a beautiful woman, Mohani Baiji, that's her name, and she was a very big, round woman, short, with a saffron robe and a red dot in the middle of her forehead and this beautiful Indian olive skin. And just looking at her, that love that I had just been drenched in, that I had become, I knew that was in her as well, and I could feel it, and I could feel such a direct connection to her. And then I looked at the other 27 people in the initiation, I felt the same for them. And when we left, I felt the same for everybody I met. And when I hitchhiked the next day and began the journey home, I loved everyone who picked me up. I kept looking at the sky and the trees and the flowers and saying, nice job, God. This is so beautiful. This is so beautiful. My whole existence had changed. What had been my primary identity, I now saw as so secondary. So, not meaningless in the sense that it had no meaning at all, but that it was of incidental or coincidental importance, and that what was important was this new primary identity, this new being that I had become, this new person. See, I had died. I had asked to die, and I had died. And as Jesus taught, you were born once of the flesh and once of the spirit. And he said you must be born again. And it's known by so many things in different traditions, whether it's, you know, whether it's grace, awakening, enlightened, samadhi, satori, experiencing the emptiness that is not nothing, and experience of pure, all those things were gifted to me. It was so startling. And I recalled, as I was on my way home, having left the temple the day following this initiation, because I knew that's what I had come for, and I remember singing and crying and laughing and jumping and running, and just saying, I'll never leave this place, I'll never leave this place, I'll never leave this place. I knew that was permanently embedded in my heart, that my heart had opened up, and that I was experiencing new life. And I just ask you, please, not to fall prey to the watered-down versions of new life or being born again or enlightenment or any of those. This was an experience that changed me so dramatically that I no longer live, but there was a new Christ consciousness within me. I guess that would be a way to say it boldly. And so here I was, drenched in this loving awareness, this new identity, this new way of being. I found myself going to people I had known or people I had owed money to, people I had hurt, and letting them know that I loved them and doing what I could for reparation at the time. But I also found that I was no longer malleable to emotional manipulation, that people who had put me on guilt trips or people who had attempted to emotionally manipulate me could no longer do it. Those guilt trips didn't work anymore. They were just unimportant. I was filled with joy and peace and love. I had stepped into perfection. Those were trifling. I mean, if you were upset with me, well, that's you're upset. I'll be kind and loving to you, and I don't have a person in the world I would turn away from my door for any reason whatsoever in this entire world. But it's impossible to emotionally manipulate me. I feel unassailable. I feel so protected. I feel so a part of this divine presence that I was just drenched in. And it is fresh for me every day. It is like a tender mercy every day, and it's 31 years later. So there's my history. It took me, and I'm sure I'll go on and on about it more. The very next week, as soon as I got home, I began teaching classes. honoring my vow. It was very, very strongly embedded in my mind, and I was very acutely aware that I had made a vow. Even, and I had said, I will share this. And I remember even saying naively, and I won't say it in this vague sort of way that teachers talk about spiritual attunement or this gift of grace, this being born again, this new way of living, this perfect peace of mind that can come to us. I will say exactly what it is. Well, as I said earlier in the show, it simply doesn't work that way, and it can't be put into words. But we can point to it. Some teachers, Osho, say we point to the moon. We point to this beautiful place. And for those who are seeking it, on some level, their heart will resonate when the right teacher uses the right phrase in the right context. Those who have tasted it will feel their heart resonate, and they will hear the joy in back of my voice, and they will hear the truth in it. Those who seek it, and I happen to be appealing to them on some level, their heart will resonate with what I'm teaching. And there are those who have tasted it or spent some time with it who are seeking it again, if you will, who feel like they had a taste of it but they lost it, and may feel like they will pick up their journey again. And that was my vow, and I have continued with that. My first classes I called EPIC, which was an acronym for an experience of pure intuitive consciousness. And as I said, more than 30 years later, that what I called at the time an experience of pure intuitive consciousness, I now address it a little bit differently, but certainly that still works for me, and I still use that experience of pure intuitive consciousness. And I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. So as I said, I still teach. I teach something called the Mystic Heart Meditation now that just kind of came to me over the years and kind of set up a model. As I said, necessarily imprecise. It points to something that has to be experienced directly, and I'm not stringent, certainly, about techniques, but I do offer a model and a technique, if you will. And as I said, I still teach, and I train teachers now in St. Pete, and I teach a class called Mystic Heart Meditation at the Mystic Heart School of Meditation, and I've been invited to Newport Beach, California in February to teach a two-day seminar on this, and I'm really looking forward to that. And so, for those still listening, I have a little bit more to say about my history on that. What I said, I only heard, could only compare it to near-death experiences. Shortly after my experience, I happened to tune into a radio show, and there were four people who had near-death experiences, traumatic near-death experiences, where they were pronounced dead, where they had stopped breathing. And for years, I could not reconcile that. How did I, in quiet meditation, experience what near-death experiences speak about so explicitly and specifically in the same manner as I had spoken of, the light being, going into the blue-white light, being overwhelmed with light, losing fear, coming to a new identity, seeing life in a totally new light from a whole new perspective. They said exactly the words of what happened to me, and I couldn't reconcile it. But years and years later, a disciple of Yogananda Paramahansa, who formed Expanding Light, or Ananda Church of Self-Realization, and my wife is involved in that, and I'm very pleased with it, I had listened to one of his tapes that she brought home, and he spoke of yogis who can go into the breathless state of meditation, where they virtually, the mind goes so quiet, which is the goal of meditation, one of the steps of meditation, I should say more accurately, to quiet the mind, that the mind can go so quiet and so empty that, and the mind is the big, and pardon me if I'm not physiologically correct on this, but the mind is the big demand in the body for sugar, for oxygen. And so breathing and moving that oxygen, moving that sugar in the blood to the brain to nourish all that inner chatter that we have going on and to keep all that activity going is part of our breathing process, if you will. And that going into a deep meditation, to a silent meditation, to a place of emptiness, we can virtually come to a breathless state. That there are yogis who can go to a breathless state for, I don't know for how long or for periods of time, but I've heard a lot of stories of those buried and dug up and all kinds of incredible stories. But for me, I saw the parallel that apparently or possibly I had gone into that breathless state. I'd gone to that quiet place where virtually my brain activity stopped. And what that did was, boom, it allowed that inrush of wisdom, that gift, that place where let me call them something, and I'll tell you what I mean by it. The Lions of Fear and Doubt. I've written a book. It took me a long time to plug it. I'm surprised it took me this long. I've written a book called Taming the Lions of Fear and Doubt. and it's available on Amazon.com. It's available on my website at mindgoal.com. Do you have a goal in mind? Mind, MINDGOAL.com. And you'll see some different things that I'm involved in on that website. And the book, Taming the Lions of Fear and Doubt, is about quieting that internal chatter, that fear and doubt that speaks to us, and that negative self-talk that we have, that fearful self-talk that seems so constant in our mind. And what the premise of the book is that we can tame those lions, we can quiet them. Fear and doubt have value in our life and a purpose in our life. And you know, when we were younger and we had on brand new sneakers and we wanted to jump over a big puddle, a little doubt was good so we didn't get trouble with Mom. If we were ready to dart across the street but we saw a big truck coming, fear was good because it kept us from doing something foolish. Yet what seemed to have happened in our lives is that as we were socially coerced, I'll use that powerful kind of language, as we were socially coerced to blend in with the status quo to become one of I'm trying to be cautious of my language, to fit the mold of what it's like to be a civilized human being. Right? That would be the most civil thing to say. But it involved think, sit in your seat, will we reward you handsomely for right answers, here's gold stars, here's 100s, here's A's, here's what a smart boy, as a balance to what a bad boy, and to the point where we became so identified with our thinking process and that internal chatter that became our primary identity. And there's a lot of fear and doubt in that primary identity. We rehearse fear and doubt day after day after day after day, year after year after year after year after year, and those things that happen in our life and recur in our life that cause us difficulty, there's a case that they're brought upon us, but because we keep rehearsing that same state of mind that brings them in, that causes us to make choices from that level of consciousness. And so quieting those lines of fear and doubt, quieting that chatter can open a door for us. And that door that I'm talking about is spiritual attunement. And in my model, there are three elements I begin with to talk about the spiritual attunement. Meditation, and I'm going to cover Mystic Heart Meditation in this and every show. I'll spend a few minutes on that and give you the very simple process of it. Would be first of the three elements. And the second element is conscious attitude. And that's the choices we make, to be nice or nasty. And again, that, as I just said, those choices come from our level of consciousness, but they also come from a lot of rehearsed hurt, if you will, a lot of rehearsed pain, a lot of negative self-talk. Well, the neat way they blend together, these three elements that I'll speak of, is that the meditation quiets that down and begins to raise our level of consciousness so that our conscious attitude becomes nicer. We find more peace in this world. And for some, it's a kind of a slow-moving rheostat where the light begins to come in. They find that they spend more time in loving awareness and being nice and being thoughtful and being caring and less time reacting and feeling emotional and taking things personally and being immature. Meditation helps relieve stress in many ways so that our conscious choices, our conscious attitude improves our life. And I'm going to get more into that. And so the choices we begin to make life easier for us. And the third element, so I said meditation is the first element, the conscious attitude, to be nice or nasty, to be loving or hateful or mean, and taking things personally or barking at people or swearing at people or being abusive of people in any way. And quick aside there, I love the title of the book, Hurt People, Hurt People. That's didn't even have to open the book when you read that title. Just mentioning that in passing, so that choices to be nasty come from hurt and pain, and who do we fault? That person or their uncle or their parents or their grandparents or their aunt or their parents or the parents before them or their ancient ancestors. It comes down to us. We need to take responsibility for our conscious attitude, and there are ways. If we are not feeling right with the world, if we are not at peace of mind, if we are seeking peace of mind, if there's something that we're not attuned to, there are many teachers. And I present myself as one of them. I said there are ways in this life, very simple ways, very solid ways. There are models to follow that can bring you greater peace of mind, more happiness, and more contentment in this life. And that's the message of all spiritual teachers. And the ultimate of that is beyond description, and it is so incredibly beautiful. So, meditation, second choice is conscious attitude, and the third element of that, it's known by many names, grace. Being filled with the Holy Spirit, samadhi, satori, experiencing the emptiness that is not nothing, the experience of pure intuitive consciousness, but higher intelligence, that element that comes beyond what we think or imagine. The ego protects us and essentially says that primary identity that we've accepted, that thinking, emotional, passionate identity that we see as our entire life, says this is who you are and you cannot leave this place. This is how I protect you, with fear and doubt and by saying these are your limits. We can transcend those limits. That's the message of the spiritual teachers. We can transcend those limits and we can move into a place where we see our true primary identity that makes life beautiful in a thunderbolt, in a snap of a finger, in an instant, can shift our entire perspective of life and shift our identity. Jesus called it being born again. He said, only as a child you enter the kingdom of heaven. But this third element, it's here that we encounter the resistance from our what we formed as our personal identity, the ego, that it begins to feel like death. It says, oh, you can't make this leap. That's why it's called the leap of faith. You can't make this shift. You'll die. It feels like death. Yet the moment we make the shift, the ego embraces it and just loves it and sees that there's an added dimension to life that now moves life into a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful place. You know, in Christianity, it's called entering the Holy of Holies, being born again, being filled with the Spirit, knowing that Jesus abides within you, that God abides within you, and abiding in God, rendering the veil, ripping through the veil, getting past the denial. In the Hindu religions, they talk about Maya, the illusion, that we break down that illusion and see that all those things that we saw as primary can really be seen as illusory. They're a very convincing case, yet the meaning of that can become very, very clear to us, and we can see that what was previously our primary identity is really a secondary identity, and that our primary identity is one of no fear, of peace and love and joy, of utter tranquility and perfect peace of mind. Those can be ours in this lifetime. Okay? I'm going to come back to my model. Okay, so the three elements to begin with that are part of the process, if you will, and the process points to a shift. I don't want to use the word experience because it's life-changing. It changes from one identity to another, so it's not just an experience. It's a life-changing experience, if you will. And so, as I was talking earlier about, we learn to accept our rational thought process, our linear process, and our attendant emotions and passions and our sensual apparatus as everything that we are. And what happened as a result of that, I mean, you can even look at the allegory of the Garden of Eden in the Bible that says that don't eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. As soon as we begin to say this is good and this is bad, we have lost touch with our whole identity, and we are only over into a portion of it. And we lose touch with an intuitive way of being, a purely intuitive way of being that complements the rational process. The ego doesn't die in the process. The ego is stunned. It's down for the count. It's KO'd. But when it comes to, if you will, it's delighted. It's delighted. It comes to as a new being, and it has a partner. And so now we have a rational process that we've learned the beautiful tools of that, complemented by a pure intuitive consciousness, a Christ consciousness, a Krishna consciousness, an enlightened consciousness, an awakened consciousness that makes us whole and moves our conscious attitude into one of a nearly constant loving awareness. I say nearly because, you know, we work to maintain that place our entire life. You know, I love Ramana Maharshi who taught that awakened teachers will teach aspirants, those aspiring to come to this place of peace of mind, of awakening, will teach them to meditate to attain this. And then a very important teaching that he offers is that those who have attained it meditate to maintain that. And so we stay in that place at our core that is unassailable, but we still have the events and purposes of this life, but they're seen in a very different way. And again, to be horribly redundant, those can only be known by direct experience, how we experience life with this shift. What the show is about, what my class on Mystic Heart Meditation are about, what the mystic path is about, known to virtually all religions, as Sufi and Kabbalists, the Buddhists, that it's known through all of the traditions, that there is a mystical element to life. There is a knowing, a gnosis that we can come to that brings us to the core of the teachings, that brings us to what the awakened teachers are talking about and in effect makes us awakened teachers. That's the role of the, I know guru has lost popular appeal, but guru it's simply translated as darkness remover, Guru darkness remover, darkness remover. That the awakened teacher, the guru, is an interior decorator, comes into your inner castle, into your inner home, and removes the dark curtains that life's events and the teachings that we received early on have caused us to put up out of fear and doubt and pain and anger and hurt, and takes us down and lets light come in, lets us be enlightened. And so don't be put off by the word guru necessarily. It's simply the mission of the guru is to enlighten you, to pass on, to point to that place of awakening, enlightenment, that is your experience. There's no one can teach this. They can speak of it. It's not taught by words, but the excitement that builds the faith in it is by words. That allows you to open the door to its possibility. And if you're hungry and thirsty for it, then you will open that door, and you will open it wide to the exclusion of everything else in life. One of Jesus' most beautiful teachings is seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, your right understanding, the fact that you can be connected to God, and all those things that you seek, all those things on your success list, all those things that you believe will bring you happiness and contentment and peace in this world will be added to you, and you'll need to be anxious for nothing, that you will have stepped into perfection. So as I said, this is that meditation, we can choose to do that. We can have a conscious attitude about life that meditation will improve, and then we can open our hearts, if you will, our mind, that then opens our heart to grace, to receiving something new in our life that will shift everything. And I will call that, again, an experience of pure intuitive consciousness, and that can come in combination with meditation, with a conscious loving awareness. As you meditate and you begin to notice, or if you are a meditator and you resume it, or you take these words in and digest them a little more thoroughly and say, wait a minute, there's more to meditation for me, that you will find yourself surprisingly being more loving. It's our natural way of being. We are naturally lovers. We are naturally moved into a beautiful place of loving life, of being grateful for every breath, of being filled with gratitude for who we are in this life. It moves us. I wrote a little pamphlet one time that had little daily mini meditations and exercises, and one of the pages was called Take the Praise Train. And the premise was that we wake up every morning with two tickets on our nightstand for the day's ride. One's called the Complain Train and one's called the Praise Train. The Complain Train, and you can hear people every day who are on the Complain Train. Something's wrong and they're complaining and they're complaining and they're complaining, and they replay it at work, at home, on the way home, with everyone who will listen, to the people at home, and the next day and the next day and the next day if you allow it. And they're on the complaint train, and it takes them in circles. It gets them nowhere. The praise train is one that moves us to that place of loving awareness, moves our conscious attitude to gratitude for life, and it's a beautiful combination with meditation. And a way to get off the complaint train is to begin to consciously choose to make your conscious attitude a choice to be nice, to be loving, to be caring, to be the person who gives way, to be the person who goes the extra mile, to be the person who turns the other cheek, to be the person who doesn't take it immaturely and personally when someone says something, that instead they return kindness, that we view life as an opportunity to be kind and be of service. Those choices don't come automatically, and you can't fake that. You can't arbitrarily say, I've been nasty, but now I'm going to be nice. I'm going to change my whole personality. Well, there are techniques and methods and tools to do that, and we can fool ourselves if we don't put in the critical inner work before attempting to just make that move intellectually. It will let us down very quickly if we attempt to do that simply with our intellect. I had a beautiful experience, a great metaphor for what I'm speaking of that by meditating, by making good conscious choices, that we will receive a gift, we will receive grace, and we will receive a new identity, that we will move to that place that our questions will be answered, that we will now become whole, holy, holistic, that we'll have the rational mind and an ability to tap into our intuitive consciousness. And I'm going to end the show with 5 minutes of that, of how to tap into that intuitive consciousness. Now, it's not the McDonald's of mysticism, although it can happen the very first time. This takes some time and some patience and some practice, and I'll move to it very quickly. I just want to tell you this quick story. I was in a natural food store, and as I was beginning to leave, I was at the checkout counter, I noticed a young girl, probably 3 years old, and there were two women talking, probably her mother and someone else, and they were 4 or 5 feet from the exit door. And I noticed she would wave her hand, kind of like you would wave a magic wand, and only her palm was open. I noticed her wave her hand every few seconds, and I just happened to catch it and catch her repeat it. And I stopped and looked to see what she was doing. And what she was doing, there were automatic doors for people who left the store, and she was like opening the door for everyone with a little magic wave of her hand. And I, you know, I just loved that. And so what I did, as I approached her, I stopped a couple of feet short of where the door would open, and I waited for her to look at me, because I was fairly close to her. And finally, when she looked over me, I just did the, you know, the eyeball thing at the door. You're like, well, you can open the door for me. And she obligingly waved her hand, and I stepped forward, and the door opened. I turned around, and I expected her to be giggling, because I was. And instead, she gave me the very regal, glad to be of service look, and I just loved it. It was, to me, she was opening a door with love, and I just thought, what a metaphor. She's being so nice, and it was also just a testament to that, to the magic I speak of, that something beyond what we think or imagine, that she just knew the best strategy for enjoying life, and she was delighted with what she was doing. So I just want to give her that story, and. I know I've covered a lot of ground today. This is my first Sundays with Papa Jeff in a long time. I've been doing an evening show, and so I'm so delighted to be doing the Sundays with Papa Jeff. I want to end with just taking you through the Mystic Heart meditation. I think I have time. Yes, I do. It begins simply, you know, I have a little mantra that I offer, and all of these things are temporary until they bring you to a place where you are just walking in love, where you have just put on the mind of Christ and you're walking in love. You have come to an awakened place where life is beautiful for you. And this is a vehicle to go to that indescribable place. And I know it seems impossible to say wait patiently for a vehicle that can't be described to take you to a place that can't be described. But unless you're interested in taking this little ride, this is called a Mystic Heart Meditation. Step one is quiet awareness. Now that simply means while you're listening to me, while you're doing something in your life, while you're doing anything, while you're at work, anything, you don't need to close your eyes, but simply take a moment to move your conscious attitude to quiet awareness, your conscious connection to life, to simply being aware of where you are right at that moment. Look at what's around you. No narrative, just observation. Just quietly aware of being in that place, in this moment, in this present moment, right now. Just go quiet. As you do this, the simple exercise, you will physiologically react to it. You will feel your body relax. You will feel yourself settle as you practice this a few times. Try it. Let me know. So it begins with quiet awareness. Think of the letter Q as the Q, okay? And you'll see how this fits in. So it's quiet awareness, QA. Okay? I'm building a little mantra for you. So the Q is quiet awareness. This is how you begin it anytime. And do this when it occurs to you during the day. And these are part of the elements of spiritual attunement. Quiet awareness. Second step, only three steps, so it's pretty easy. Second step. Now, you'll notice when you do the quiet awareness that it won't take long before the chatter starts going. And we have start thinking about different things and things we need to do or listening to me or somewhere you're concerned. And so the quiet awareness is gone very fast. A way to sustain that quiet awareness a little longer is to notice your breathing. And that's simply being aware, noticing when you inhale and notice when you exhale. Focus your attention, move your attention to your breathing. Overlap quiet awareness with breath awareness. So it begins with quiet awareness, stopping, being aware of being here right now, just being. And to maintain that, to stay in that quiet awareness longer, notice when you're inhaling and notice when you're exhaling. And just enjoy the relaxation from attuning. You're beginning to attune. You're tuning. You're turning the knobs, and you're picking up spiritual attunement. You're just in these simple exercises: quiet awareness, breath awareness. Some people who want to go deeper into this and close their eyes and move deeper into the meditation after some practice can spend a few seconds in quiet awareness and then close your eyes and go into breath awareness. Don't do this if you're driving or anything, of course. And a way to maintain that breath awareness. Again, overlap quiet awareness with breath awareness is to notice as you inhale, you'll feel a very subtle vibration, and vibration is very big in spiritual teachings these days, that you'll notice there's a very subtle vibration. As you inhale, you feel the vibration come up through between your lungs and your esophagus and your throat. Just let that vibration go, and with your eyes closed, just put your gaze in the middle of your forehead. I know there are a lot of terms for that in different traditions. Let's just call it the middle of your forehead for right now. So just keep your gaze there, but feel that subtle vibration as you inhale as you notice your inhale. And as you exhale, feel that subtle vibration as you just settle and it goes back down to the top of your stomach. Quiet awareness overlaid with breath awareness. And now for some people who are going to go even deeper into it, imagine as you inhale that there's no mass to it. It's a ball of light. It's very diffused. It's very, very soft. This little ball of light, that as you inhale, this little ball of inner light leaves the top of your stomach and comes right up to that place where your gaze is in the middle of your forehead. And as you exhale, let that ball of light just gently settle back down to the top of your stomach. And with each breath, allow yourself deeper and deeper relaxation. Move more and more into quiet awareness, into breath awareness. Now that alone is something I would recommend practicing every day for a few minutes when it occurs to you in the morning or while you're taking a shower. You can do it with eyes open or closed. It can be more effective or more formal, if you will, to sit quietly, to maybe assign 10 minutes a day, if you can, 20 minutes a day, someplace where you can do that. But if not, when it occurs to you, to just take a few minutes to move into that QABA, quiet awareness, breath awareness. Now the third step, there are like two parts of the third step, but third step is heart awareness, and that is a deepening of listening. Listen more deeply. Listen more quietly. You've gone to quiet awareness. You're quieting down those lines, fear and doubt, that internal chatter. And now you're following your breathing, and your gaze is staying in the middle of your forehead. And now just simply listen to your heart. Now the heart doesn't speak in words, but we know intuitively, and we speak of it, that the heart is the seat of kindness and compassion and empathy and wisdom. And that seat of kindness and compassion and empathy and wisdom can speak to our mind without words. It can ride on your breath from your heart to the middle of your forehead and speak to your conscious awareness and elevate your conscious awareness. And bring you a sudden rush of startling wisdom. I like to call it a wisdom whisper from the heart. And so just as part of this quiet awareness, breath awareness, heart awareness, we now have QA, BA, HA, QBAHA. Think of it as Q apostrophe even. And think of Q as, okay, the Q is quiet awareness. As soon as you find yourself, and you will just do it without even thinking sometimes. You'll just find, gee, I'm just kind of being quietly aware. And this, a few minutes of this type of meditation, you will notice changes in your life. It will begin to change your conscious attitude about life. Simple as that. I've tried to keep it from being too cosmic, even though my history I told you about it may have sounded a little cosmic. These are very practical, solid. And I use these working with people on quitting smoking. They become very aware of the whole process of smoking, and moving that into that quiet awareness of their smoking process can have them stop. I use it with people for weight. I have something called Nuance, weight management system. And I have people find a new relationship with food, a new healthy relationship with food that shifts their perspective by simply doing this meditation, by focusing on a conscious attitude of their conscious choice to be healthier in their eating habits. Shift from reaching for that bag of Oreos to reaching for an organic banana.
Or coming to the end.
And so I ask that you reach this highest potential, that you tune in again, and love having you here with me. And until next time, this is Papa Jeff.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program. And we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.